Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, we start with the good, and the hits just keep on coming. Hillary Clinton is making her job very easy in the good martini ever since she launched this campaign about a week ago. Yesterday, we talked about the fact that she completely staged her event with everyday Iowans. They were longtime Democratic activists who were vetted and personally transported to this random encounter with Hillary Clinton. Now Hillary Clinton is under fire from BuzzFeed, of all places, for essentially lying about the fact that her grandparents all immigrated to the United States. Census records show that only one of Clinton's grandparents was born outside of the United States. The explanation from the Clinton campaign spokesperson is her grandparents always spoke about the immigrant experience, and as a result, she has always thought of them as immigrants. So that has come up. There's the wanting to get the money out of politics while raising $2.5 billion. So all of this kind of came to a head last night on Special Report with Brett Baer. Here's Charles Krauthammer explaining Hillary Clinton's big problem right now.
This is her Marie Antoinette cake tour. She's sampling the cake among the people with whom she deigns to dine and to chat. And the problem with her is the inauthenticity has reached a point where nothing you see is believable. Even if she were sincere about anything, you wouldn't be able to tell it.
Jim, gotta love that.
Why would Hillary Clinton suddenly start talking about the amazing immigrant experience and how much immigrants mean to America and her connection to that immigrant experience?
Because she wants to co-opt the issue, and it's the issue that kind of tripped her up 8 years ago when she wouldn't commit to driver's license for illegals.
All right, those were two actually really good answers and not the one I was actually thinking of, Greg. I think this was totally a reaction to Rubio. That she announces over the weekend, it's kind of a flop. Rubio had a really solid announcement and response, and I was discussing this with some other conservative bloggers yesterday, that people who aren't into politics, people who are not news junkies, have started turning to the people who are into politics and saying, hey, what's with this Marco Rubio guy? He sounds really interesting. And he got a big positive reaction from people who are certainly not uninformed voters, but the people who aren't swallowing politics on a regular basis. He broke through on this. And if we're seeing this anecdotally, there's probably a good chance that the Clinton campaign is either seeing this anecdotally or has focus grouped it or has tested it, might even be seeing polling or something like that. And look, this is one of the great strengths Rubio has is that by telling the immigrant story, look, we Americans, whether we're immigrants, descendants of immigrants, or came over on the Mayflower, we all feel good about ourselves, right? We are the land of opportunity. We are the land where you can come here and make your dreams. And separate from the issue of illegal immigration, which gets into the topics of law enforcement and people who are breaking the rule, people who are driving down wages, effectively stealing jobs, all that kind of negativity and nastiness, Marco Rubio talking about the joys of legal immigration makes people feel good about themselves. And I got to tell you right now, there's probably no emotional connection to Hillary Clinton right now. She's been around for 25 years. You know what you're getting. If you were going to feel thrilled by Hillary Clinton, you would have felt it by now. And so this is her desperate attempt to say, look, I can be like Rubio too. She could talk in the abstract about it, but no, she's got to personalize it, and she can't even be honest about that. She's got to pretend that people were immigrants who weren't and stuff. The duplicity, the dishonesty, the need to make things just so politically perfect, even if they don't match the facts, she can't resist this impulse anywhere. And the odds of her overcoming this impulse in the next 18 months are not particularly good.
The question now is, who is the best person to take her on? You certainly pointed out how Rubio has gotten a lot of attention, broken through the usual people who notice these sorts of rollouts and actually connected, it would appear, with some folks who really like to know what he has to say about different issues. They like his personal story. And then there's Jeb Bush, who's also another option. He's our bad martini today. Jeb, of course, the former governor of Florida. Right now, he's weighing in on an issue that most conservatives aren't probably thinking about very much, but they're also not very excited about, and that's the idea of Loretta Lynch as the next attorney general. Every conservative probably wants Eric Holder gone, but after Loretta Lynch went to her confirmation hearing and absolutely and strongly defended the president's actions unilaterally on immigration, which he said numerous times that he didn't have the power to do and then did it anyway, Republicans pretty much turned cold on her. There's some other issues from her past as well that have come up. Right now, it looks like if there were to be a vote, she'd probably sneak through for sure on a Biden tiebreaker. But right now, the vote's being held up because the Democrats are being sticks in the mud about abortion on a sex trafficking bill. Enter Jeb Bush at the Politics and Pie Forum in Concord, New Hampshire on Thursday night. "I think presidents have the right to pick their team," he says. So he thinks the Republicans should bring the nomination up for a vote. "If someone is supportive of the president's policies, whether you agree with them or not, there should be some deference to the executive. It should not always be partisan." So, Jim, once again, it looks like he's kicking conservatives in the shins.
There are two or three things that jump out about this. One being that if the idea is, well, we're going to respect the president's ability to appoint their own people, which for a long time was a kind of bipartisan value, or there was a consensus on that. The reason to vote against somebody, whether they were Supreme Court justice or a cabinet official, it had to be an issue of qualifications or ethics or something like that. A matter of, well, I just disagree with them, wasn't a good enough reason. And then along came Clarence Thomas, and then along came Samuel Alito and John Roberts, and the Democrats basically blew up this idea and basically said, no, no, no. If I disagree with this nominee's philosophy, if I don't agree with the way they see the world, that's a good enough reason to vote against them. There is no more need for this, and thus you won't see Scalia and Ginsburg both had either unanimous or near unanimous votes in the U.S. Senate. I'm talking about Supreme Court justices, but it's a very similar philosophy for the president's cabinet. If Jeb Bush thinks that by doing this, he's going to get a lot of Democrats to vote for people in his cabinet, he's unspeakably naive, because the era of bipartisan votes for cabinet officials is basically coming to an end. Whoever Jeb Bush picks, unless it's exactly the people the Democrats want, they're going to get a lot of no votes. So the idea that, well, if we're nice to the Democrats, they'll be nice to us. No, not the case. And the other one is holding up Lynch nominations, one of the few areas the Republicans have leverage, right? I mean, this is a president who's basically, I guess we should be glad he hasn't just unilaterally decided, well, I'm declaring you're in recess and I'm making a recess appointment, so I don't need to have a confirmation vote. Obama basically has trashed the entire concept of checks and balances. And to say, well, we're just going to, yeah, right now she's being held up due to the human trafficking bill, right, Greg?
Yes.
You know, that basically, you know, for once Republicans are saying, look, we want something. We want a human trafficking bill, and you guys are throwing a fit about the tiny abortion provision into this. You're trying to basically bring in abortion politics into the horrible subject of human trafficking. You're playing politics with this, and until you guys drop that, you're not getting your attorney general nominee. You make a little concession, we make a little concession. You know, this is our leverage. We can't shut down the government, can't impeach the president. This is what we got. And Jeb Bush wants him to give that up. Jeb Bush seems like a really nice guy, ready to go to Washington politics and maybe having this very out-of-date mentality, maybe almost his dad's mentality of how Washington works and high-mindedness and fair-mindedness and all that stuff. Without realizing, you know, look, Washington, D.C. is Hobbesian, and I don't want to hear any Republicans saying, well, the way I'll make Washington nicer is by making more concessions to Democrats. Right? I just don't buy that's going to make things any better. I think that's just feeding the beast.
His brother tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah.
So anyway, on to a much happier, although somewhat disturbing, crazy martini. Yesterday, one of the happiest things that happened, of course, was the release of a short trailer for Star Wars Episode 7. I believe it is due out in theaters later this year, maybe around Christmas time.
And Christmas time, yeah.
The thing that has a lot of people excited is we get to see Han Solo for the first time since 1983, because his character was not at all in the prequels that came out, and some of us would like to forget, but so he says, Chewie, we're home. And so everybody's excited about that. They played a small clip of the trailer on Morning Joe on MSNBC today. They did not include that part, so that's why Joe Scarborough's a little miffed. But the problem here is Mika Brzezinski's complete lack of understanding of Star Wars. Listen up. This is a lot of crosstalk with this panel, but it's very disturbing if you can listen.
Wait a second. They didn't even show Han Solo and Chewie.
C-3PO.
20 seconds.
C-3PO. I loved your pronunciation of Tatooine. That was very
Tatooine,
impressive.
Oh, yeah.
You're like a...
Of course, Tatooine.
No, Star Trek.
Different. You're mixed up.
Different.
What is this? That was Star Wars.
Seriously,
What's the difference?
Could you just please?
You're embarrassing yourself.
Put down these sharp objects that are cutting up your reputation right now, please.
Wait a minute, Star Trek, Star Wars, seriously.
Jim, there has to be some standard to get on the air, and I'm pretty sure this ought to be one of them.
This. In a long and sordid history, this is the worst thing MSNBC has ever done. You know, if I were Joe Scarborough at that moment, I would just say, just walk away from the table. Just get off my stage. It's called Morning Joe. It's not called Morning Mika. Go away. I don't even want to see. I can't even look at you right now. How dare you, Mika Brzezinski? You and your Secretary of State dad, what were you doing, right? No wonder you opposed SDI. You didn't even understand what Star Wars was. Calling me a Trekkie. It's not knives that are cutting up her reputation right now. It's lightsabers, damn it. On the one hand, I don't know about you. I have encountered a surprising number of people who say, yeah, I've never seen a Star Wars movie. And I kind of look at them. I blink a few times. They'll acknowledge it. They're familiar with the concept. And I don't think they've been living in a cave somewhere. Usually it's women, which I suppose is understandable. What I really don't get are people who are my age, children of the late 70s and 80s, who don't have any familiarity with it. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, were you in a study abroad program somewhere in, like, far-off Madagascar or something? You know, I just. But even then, they had movie theaters all around. So I'm baffled by this. And mixing up Star Wars and Star Trek, we always have joked about the Acela, the Acela corridor media and folks like that. But if you next time, you know, Mika Brzezinski insists that she's not out of touch with the average American, she's probably the kind of person who thinks the New Republic is a magazine instead of being the form of government that was formed after the fall of the Empire in all the Timothy John novels. Okay, stop me before I go any geekier anymore. But you get the idea. This is
well, you're exactly right here, Jim. Because first of all, anyone who's you know, mid-40s to even mid-50s or even older and beyond, remember the original trilogy. They re-released the original trilogy right yeah. before they did the prequels, digitally remastered and everything else. Then the prequels came out. Obviously, DVDs on demand, Netflix, all of this is ubiquitous at this point. So to not have any familiarity with it and to completely confuse it with Star Trek is an insult to fans of both.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, like, you know, as you're looking through this, I'm looking, thinking, like, you know, Greg, you're not even mentioning the Ewok Saturday morning cartoon show, the Droid Saturday morning cartoon show, the Clone Wars on Cartoon Network, the current Star Wars. Anyway, you know, and but Jim, you're a grown man. Why are you saying this? I have little boys. That's why. you know, my best sales pitch for parenthood. You get to still be into this and not be a weirdo. So, yeah, like, I'm kind of baffled by her absolute – unless she's, like, playing it up to be, you know, because she knows going to drive Scarborough and everybody else at the table crazy. I'm trying to think of, like, what the – HBO's Girls is really big in the Acela Corridor, New York Times credit. What others, like, a really smug
– House of Cards.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of something that's really the Chardonnay of, you know – if I mix up two wines, you know, Mika Brzezinski is going to, oh, you know, red wine and fish, white slacks after Labor Day, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I this is how we feel, Mika, all right? You've just created the ultimate faux pas. You know?
Did she intentionally try to drive them crazy? I would say consider Mika Brzezinski's comprehension of most issues that enter the Morning Joe roundtable, and I think you have your answer.
It could be either considered trolling or I would say minocking. After the creatures that were sucking on the power cables of the Millennium Falcon.
You now have your parameters, folks. You have Jim Garrity on the one side and Mika Brzezinski on the other side. And I think we know which one is far more disturbing, and it's not you, Jim. So,
Schwartz is not with her.
clearly. Jim, have a fabulous weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend and tune in on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.